All right, Philip. I'm all set for Drew and Eric to show up. I've got the chips and dip. I've got our microphone set up. Everything is plugged in. Oh. We have enough electricity. I paid the electricity bill. I have the pizzas on the way. Let's see. Is there anything I'm forgetting? What? You have a concerned look on your face. Philip.
That was today.
Yeah.
Eric and Drew were coming. Ooh, I wrote that in my calendar wrong. I thought it was tomorrow.
What?
Yep.
So what are you saying?
I have plans. What? I'm busy
what
right
now.
What
plans are more important than Drew, Eric, and, you know, our podcast?
I have this loaf of stale bread and a bunch of ducks in the park that need to eat it. I penned that in a week ago.
You used pen?
Yeah, that one's solid. I can't change it.
Oh, man. So what you're saying is I'm going to have to do the interview all by myself?
Yes, just this once, because I have ducks to feed. I would have to get a hold of all of the ducks and try to reschedule, and that's...
Well, that's not going to happen. No. Everybody knows that ducks don't answer cell phones.
No.
At least not during the day. Well, it sounds like you're going to have to go.
I'm sorry, but you can do it.
Oh, that sorry sounded like a not sincere sorry. I'm going to choose to accept it because I want to continue this friendship and podcast. But next time I'd prefer it if you meant it.
I will practice on convincing sorries while I'm at the pond feeding ducks.
Hi, I'm Philip.
Hi, I'm Matt.
First we'll have a little chat.
Then put on our ring rubbers.
Now it's time for Next at Bat.
You're listening to Next at Bat, a podcast devoted primarily to improvisation where Philip Simondette, the creator of the podcast, and myself, Matt McLeod, the host, interview and then perform with local Minneapolis and St. Paul-based improvisers and other artists. Improvisation is the art of making stuff up. Nothing is scripted. Nothing in improv has been performed before or will be performed again. Short-form improv is game-based and has been popularized by shows like Whose Line Is It Anyway? Long-form improv is story-based, like a play without a script, and this is the type of improv we will perform on this show. After a short interview, our guests will join us for our version of what is known as The Bat, a forum created by Joe Bill, co-founder of the Annoyance Theater. Traditionally, The Bat is a specific form that is performed in front of a live audience, but with the lights out, to simulate a radio broadcast. There will be several scenes in Our Bat, with little or no indication of a new scene occurring, though sound effects and human-made music are often used. Without further ado, let me present Next at Bat with Matt and Philip.
I've heard tales of people doing Heralds in the Dark, but for real in the dark with movement on stage. With
seriously?
Like, I think they put bubble wrap on the edges of the stage so they know if they're getting close to the edge.
That's great.
And then it's...
Stunt prov, and that is not me slamming stunt prov. I come from a troupe that just did nothing but stunt prov for, yeah, I'm still in that troupe essentially.
I'd make my list of styles of improv to start slamming here.
All right, we're here today with Drew Kirsten and Eric Heiberg. Hi guys.
Hi.
Hi Matthew.
Oh, you decided to play up your voice as opposed to me, which would definitely laugh at some point and get into higher registers and just sound like a complete dork. I will expose myself. You can do your NPR thing all you want, Drew, but
I'll be in the low tones this afternoon.
There it is. You already cracked me up. Thanks a lot. When all composure's lost, this is the worst podcast ever.
Eric, what are you talking about?
Oh, great. Everybody screws up with me. Oh, yeah. I can do it too, you sons of bitches.
It's funny you call that NPR voice because they must coach that, right? How does Justin Timberlake know to speak in this voice when he talks to Terry Gross?
I don't know. You're right.
They all shift into that. They must talk about it.
They all do.
It's a shift. And the thing is, like, I never understand. I mean, like, I understand. I understand you don't want it. Maybe you want. I understand you want to differentiate yourself from the Q Morning Zoo. I totally get that. You know. But by the same token, you know, there's this, like, there is that. It is hilarious how I think it's just been quieter and quieter as people. You know, as Terry Gross, as you know, different people have started to hello, I'm Carl Castle, and blah, blah. You know what I mean? Like, this is a... Anyway.
By the way, we should apologize for name-dropping your competition, so...
Yes.
Fuck Terry Gross and Fresh Air.
Exactly.
Stay on Next Step Back,
exactly.
Guys.
All things considered, you can suck a huge wang.
That's true. All right.
They offer nothing to society.
Whereas we are saving it over here.
We are. Yeah.
So both of you guys are coaches, yeah?
Correct.
Yes.
Is there such a thing as a universal note that you could give to a group? And if so, what would it be?
I don't know if there's a singular universal note, but there's certainly notes that I've given to every group I've ever worked with at some point that they'll eventually come up. Commitment.
Like what? Okay.
Commitment's a big one. I'll oftentimes say, everything I'm going to say to you doesn't matter if you commit to what you are going to do or what you just did. If you had committed to that character more, if you'd committed to that move more, whatever it is, any of the other perceived things you could have done differently wouldn't have mattered as much. That's a big one.
Mm. Yeah. Honestly, with me, because because of the way I look at improv, a lot of my improv, there are those who kind of look at it. I think we all look at it in a way of like looking as part art and part art therapy. Well, I'm kind of more on the extreme of the art therapy for me. So I've learned more about myself. To me, it's more about doing experiments and hacking my own brain and mm-hmm. figuring out what things are, and then getting other people to hack their own brains. And so, and from that standpoint, you know, of all the things that we learned, of all the improv Bible that we've learned, of all the little things that we should always do, you know, yes and, do, you know, get off the who, what, when, and where, you know, that kind of stuff. All of these things that have, that all sit out there in this ambiguous, ubiquitous text that we all kind of know and understand, and kind of some of the text, just like the real Bible, kind of conflicts with other texts, etc. All of that stuff is great, and that can help you maybe become a better improviser. But the largest component of every improviser, I feel, is the largest chemical in all of us, that construction of all the chemicals that construct our improv, is the chemical that was synthesized by you very easily by just living and experiencing every single day of your life. You know? Okay. I mean, so you can't, and that's why I see every improviser that I see is just going to be, the only thing that I hope they can do is just be the best improviser they can be, sure. as opposed to, and for a long time, I think a lot of people like myself, I've done tons of dumbass stuff. And one of the dumbass things that I've done is try and actually be like, wow, I really love this improviser. I want to be just like them.
Right.
You know, and it's great. It's great to have those people that we admire and we want to pull these aspects from. But knowing ourselves is probably our greatest weapon, because the only thing we can really do is realize that there will never be another improviser like Drew Kirsten. There will never be another improviser like Eric Heiberg or Matthew McLeod. There will never be another improviser like TJ and Dave or Joe Bernard or Joe Bill. There'll be none of these people. So, so just being the best improviser we can be. And from that standpoint, the universal notes just kind of go out the window. So yeah. The first thing I say, much similar to what Drew's saying, the first thing I say at the very beginning of everything is, everything I say is bullshit until it means something to you. It is bullshit. Please don't throw it out. Just put it on a shelf somewhere. And if you ever wind up liking it later, great. Because everything that I'm talking about is basically my knowledge that's frozen in time at that moment. Yeah. Exactly. Filtered through what I understand how you're going through. So, yeah.
I wouldn't say it like that because I don't cuss when I coach. Because I like to respect.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I'm kidding. It's actually quite the opposite.
You like to respect.
I think I cuss more whenever I'm teaching and coaching improv than I do in real life. Like, there's this, fuck yes, yeah. Yes. Like I get that.
Yes,
for
same
some reason.
Here, man. I mean, it's like a sailor. And I don't know. It makes me respect Susan Messing so much more, you know, just because, that woman, she's so cute and she's such a lovely person that it's always so forgivable. And you understand that it comes from this place of enthusiasm and joy. And that's what I want, like, to have that. There's that term, and I always get it wrong. My understanding of the term namaste, right, when they say at the end of the yoga, is that may the light in me reflect the light that's you in you, or something like that. There's a lot of
Susan Messing said that.
No, that's me saying. that's me saying that. But I look at Susan Messing as this person who actually has all this joy, and because of her joy, it winds up fueling my joy, and because of my joy, it winds up fueling her joy. And you know what I mean, Emily? I feel like the same way, like this, the same kind of feeling that we have anytime there's this really good symbiotic relationship between you and the people that you're talking to, you know. So anyway.
So when she says that tickled my pussy, it was
yes, it is her way of saying namaste. Exactly. Yeah. Thank right. you. It's true. You totally. That's exactly what I mean. That is what I mean. It's like that tickled my pussy. You know. And I apologize again. I'm just saying what she says a lot.
These are probably saying. Exact quotes.
Exact quotes. Exactly. Like
probably.
Yeah. Exactly. I was going to say something else, but there's certain things I think she can say that I can't say. Unfortunately, most of my stuff is just relegated to just like I fucking love that scene and that's.
I intentionally chose the word pussy instead of a different word because she can say that word and I don't as much.
I know. She's freaking wonderful. I think and nobody ever goes, oh, I can't stand her. She cusses too much. I mean, we are happy that she's so excited. So anyway, I'm sorry.
No,
that's... We're a whole thing about Susan Messing. Oh, come on, Susan Messing. And I hardly know the woman wonderful. At all. Yeah.
I've had a workshop with Susan Messing. We're best friends.
Yeah. Exactly. Oh, and that was what we were talking about before. We did this thing, like, when I first came here, like, we were talking about, like, name dropping. Like, let me drop this name. And I love this because I think everybody should know who Susan Messing is. And just, like, go take that class with her. And just, like, go take these people that have inspired me so much. You know, it's not like and also because it's not like I studied with this person. It's not like I went to a conservatory and spent our time in a fucking locked up university where we just had chalkboards and fucking
they're just wonderful
beakers
people.
And stuff like that. Yeah. They're just wonderful people. Yeah. I mean, you just have one small incident with mm-hmm. them and that's it. And we'll never get to know what they feel like. All we can go is by our own misinterpretations. And that's how I view everything I've ever learned is I've pretty much misinterpreted every single person. I've pretty much everything. But I enjoy the misinterpretations because they meant something to me. And I can only assume that this will happen with people who actually are.
But the other reason to mention the names of these giants of mm-hmm. what we do mm-hmm. is because they're not unattainable.
Right.
Because
right?
of the internet, because of podcasts, because they've written books,
yes.
because they come to festivals in our region.
Yeah.
New improvisers should know because they can go to the Omaha Improv Festival in June and study with Jimmy Crane if they want to.
Right.
It's a 5.5-hour drive.
Right.
That's available to us. How cool is that?
Yeah. And one of my favorite things that I had noticed, and I remember writing it down, I'm forgetting exactly how I wrote it down, but it was like, if there's anybody that you ever feel is just too big a name in the improv world, and you feel like they're too unapproachable, like 95% of the time, you're totally effing wrong. There's been stuff where I remember sending an email to Joe Bill about something like, I just want to pick your brain on something. Well, I'm very sorry, Mr. Bill. Well, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. You think that dude was, oh my God, he sent me back this long, beautiful, you know, just wonderful, thoughtful email mm-hmm. about what he thought, how he considered this particular question. I mean, there is nobody who is unapproachable.
The first time I met Jill, she was the sweetest person in the world. I was living in San Diego at the time. I just moved to San Diego and came to the Twin Cities Improv Festival in 2007.
Yeah.
And she like helped me coordinate ahead of time.
Yeah.
Even though we'd never met, just because she'd set me up for this festival, when I walked in the door, she knew who I was and was like, Dave Rozowski's workshop's right over here. That's what I came for.
You were in the Rozowski workshop that didn't have that many people in it. Was that it?
I believe so, yeah.
Oh, yeah, she still talks about that workshop. I mean, and the thing is, that workshop, she was a whole thing about, like, there wasn't that many people, and they just didn't know how amazing Dave Rozowski is. And here's the funny thing is, Drew and I talk about this all the time. I have a tremendous amount of love for Dave Rozowski. Third hand, my God. Third hand. The people, I use stuff that he's done that I heard from other people. Third hand. There's got to be all kinds of misinterpretations of that.
So someone asked me last week, I work with a group down in St. Olaf, a group called Scared Scriptless.
Okay.
Super cool college group. And afterwards, one of them asked, how do you get to be able to do this? Like, how did you get in a position to come and coach a group? And the funny thing about that is when I first got started, I had no idea what I was doing.
Right.
So I did an impression of Dave Rozowski because I'd taken a few workshops with him recently.
Oh, man.
So I was essentially just channeling his passion into the bullshit that was spewing out of my mouth.
Yes.
So essentially just committing to it, even as a teacher.
Right.
And I think hopefully at this point I've backfilled enough knowledge that I can fill in my own bullshit at least 50% of the time. But at that time, that's how I got started. I met a group of actors who were like, Right. Hey, we heard you know something about improv. Right. Can you teach us improv? And I was like, yes. Yes, I can.
That's fantastic. And I, right, what I feel like my one of my superpowers is, one of my superpowers as just, you know, as an improviser, and even sometimes as a human being, just as a human being, is that I don't believe my own bullshit. And if it's not working, then it needs to just go away. There's a guy in Austin by the name of Tom Booker. And I love this man so much, because he holds, at the pinnacle of everything, he holds fun as tantamount. We'll get better if we're having fun. I've seen plenty of people do things for fun, and they almost invariably always get better at what they're doing as they keep doing something for fun. But I've seen plenty of people who have been trying to do something so they could get better at it, and they just simply stop having fun. Mm-hmm. You know, those two things. And Tom Booker practices what he preaches. That guy, when he will get together and like, okay, well, we're going really fast. Let's try this. And he'll put things out there. Again, he works in the as if it's experiments of the mind. It's like, let's try this. And he's got a lot of experience. So he's trying to get in our heads. He's trying to put us in a good place. And if the energy's low or it doesn't work out, he's like, you know what? Fuck what I just did. Screw that. Let's just get rid of that. Let's try something else. Let's go back to basics. We need to keep from the place of, you know, let's have fun and get this into our bones first before he winds up moving on to, here's what I think should happen. Let's just keep working at it doggedly until we get it right, you know? We wind up resenting every part of that, you know?
Make sure we all walk out of here feeling crappy.
Exactly. He's the best guy, man, and he's such an inspiration to me. It's such an inspiration to me as far as like the component of that fun. I feel like an open heart. Having an open heart and being receptive gives you open eyes. And those open eyes wind up making you wind up being receptive, making you wind up being receptive to your partners, and wind up making the whole experience fun. So again, which was the first thing, like having fun, it gives you a full heart gives you open eyes. Somebody told me that sounds a lot like the thing from a movie called Varsity Blues. And I'm like, oh, no, no. And turns out I wound up listening and was like, oh, this is a stupid quote. This is a cheap platitude. Mine's awesome.
I haven't seen Varsity Blues in too long.
I've never seen it. That
long? You haven't seen? Wait, you're from Texas.
Why would I say? Exactly. Why would I go see a movie?
Because you just live it.
Nah, I just live it.
All right. I don't have this question fully formed in my mind, so bear with me. There's a lot of people who do improvisation because they want to play with their imagination and become new and different things. But a lot of who we are on stage comes from our everyday experience, our everyday lives. Why is it that a lot of people, I'm not going to say a lot of people, but as people are kind of transitioning from beginner to intermediate or intermediate to advanced sort of improvisers, one of the most difficult things I think a lot of people have is allowing themselves to be themselves on stage, whether they're being fantastical characters or whether they're being realistic characters and drawing on their own personal experience. They tend to go very fictional as opposed to being very realistic. Even in their fantastical characters, they tend to not draw. There's a block there. Are you kind of following what I'm saying?
Definitely. So the note that I've gotten the most from the coach who's given me the most notes is that I need to play more versions of myself and not so many big characters. And that coach would be my wife, who's seen more shows than ever. I think I've gotten better at it lately, but my default early on, and still now sometimes, is to shift quickly into a big character and roll with that. Right. And it was kind of like a security blanket. Huh. So that's why I did it. It was definitely a security blanket.
Okay.
That if I'm talking to you like this, it's a little bit easier for me to say I love you.
Is it a vulnerability thing?
Yeah, I can this guy can say I love you. But it's a lot harder to look at Eric right now and talk in my normal voice and say I love you.
I know you do, buddy. It's all right.
But that, so yeah, for me, that's what it was. And I now as a coach, I don't think that's what it is for everybody. Yeah. But I certainly see versions of myself in other people and mm-hmm. have given a similar note.
Yeah. Shit, no, that's a great question. I don't, I mean, I'm pretty sure from an oblique angle, you know, because I'm that's a good question. That's a really good question, you know, but my oblique angle is that, I feel like normalcy, like everyday normalcy, winds up giving us these shields of that prohibit us from actually being inspired by anything around us. And this is irrelevant to whether or not the character is broad or
right.
or whatever, just, you know, but we don't allow, one of the, when you're talking about like, oh, we can't be ourselves on stage, it's weird because I feel like the normalcy that envelops all of us, that we carry with us every day, because it actually winds up being really good that we don't have a crazy outburst in the middle of the grocery store. You know what I mean? Like, yep. You know, for everyone's mm-hmm. safety. I feel that normalcy, why, that we're couched in constantly, prohibits us from seeing inspirations. I think that is ourselves. I think it's a weird thing to fight ourselves on stage. And at the same time, I understand what you're saying, and I know why it's so hard to phrase that. Like, it's hard to be ourselves, and at the same time, we can't get away from ourselves. You know what I mean? We can't get away from who we actually are and who we're going to be inspired by. It's difficult, man. For me, I look at everything. There's a lot of, and I've talked about this a lot of far as long as more like how people commit, and these are what I mean by the oblique angle. Like, there's the commitment of doing something where I'm just like, I'm just going to go in there and I'm just going to have balls of brass and just go right into the scene and just force my way through it, you know, and that works. It does. And I mean, eventually you push through and then you reach another place where you have to find a new way to be courageous, you know. My way has always been dangly keys, the jingly keys method, which is whereas I fight for the fun. And I say this before. If you fight for the fun, you'll never have to fight the fear, not now or for the rest of your life. And so I wind up doing things where I'm having so much fun and I'm concentrating on the funnest parts of the scene for me that I forgot that I was supposed to be scared. You know, it's jingly keys. Like, it's the thing is like the Sears photo op. Like, here you go.
You're literally just distracting yourself.
Literally distracting myself into a place. And there are exercises like that. Whereby people, again, we're hacking our own minds, whereas we put a distraction in our way. And there's exercise, for example, we did one the other day where we were being physical and saying a mantra at the same time, distracting ourselves from not being the person who's guarded by the shields of normalcy, so that things, inspirations wind up being free to flow. They'd be free to flow from things that we would normally not see in a normal thing. I find myself in ways I think it's important for me to not be Eric Heiberg on stage. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, as you noticed from this podcast, no one would get a word in edgewise.
You said fight for the fun. I've not heard that. I've heard follow the fun. That sounds almost like a higher stakes. Is there more to the?
That? You know what? I think I like follow the fun better. That's why I like that. I'm gonna steal that.
Going the other way. I was sitting there going, "Ooh, fight for the fun." That's like being even more aggressively going after it.
Yeah, you know what? Exactly. And because I feel like the fun winds up being such an important part. Again, it winds up fun. You know, having fun gives you a full heart. Full heart gives you open eyes. I'll talk about listening real quick. Just the concept of listening. Like listening is I think when you don't get a name on stage, you know, if your teammates are feeling extra shitty, they can be like, well, listen up next time and open your fucking ears. And then that's the whole concept of listening to them. It's just absorbing information. But there's so much more to that. And I used to have this thing that I was like, well, let me experiment with this. I'm going to have this thing and I'm going to call. And I used to joke around about it. I'd be like, I do this thing where I just pay attention so closely to the person, to everything that's going on, that I'm just absorbing every single thing that they say and what they do. And I'm going to call it hyper-listening, or as what other people call it, listening. I tried that. I tried what I called hyper-listening, right? You know, because I'm not necessarily, you know, the best person in normal life for listening. And I tried hyper-listening, and I found that hyper-listening was kind of shitty. And here's why. Because I would focus so much on the intent, exactly, on things that were happening on stage, from off stage and whatnot. I would focus so hard on things like names that I wasn't absorbing the entirety of the scene. And it takes a soft focus. It takes that kind of relaxed listening.
You're losing kind of the organic.
Exactly. And so what I find, and what I find is I find that that same mental process that allows me to remember like every lyric to, you know, every lyric to a Faith No More song back from 1988, Faith No More song, that same kind of thing is this weird investment. Like you know people, you guys are like read comic books or you have some kind of thing that you're a fan of, you're like, those words mean something to you. The words on the screen mean something. The things that you read wind up meaning something to you, and you are so invested that they automatically imprint themselves on your brain. Meanwhile, you read your tax form, and you don't remember anything from that damn thing because it wasn't interested and there was nothing to be invested in. Well, there's this guy by the name of Dale Carnegie, who maybe you know. He's not an improviser.
No.
Oh, okay.
Is it Carnegie or Carnegie?
Carnegie? Oh, that's a good question. I don't know, man.
On NPR, don't they sometimes pronounce it the Carnegie Foundation?
It might be, yeah. Well, anyway, so he wrote this book that you might have seen on somebody on your parents' bookshelf called How to Win Friends and Influence People.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Right. Yeah,
that's why I've heard the name.
And it sounds like a cheap title, but part of what he talks about in there is he talks about of actually having a genuine investment in the people that you're talking to. It's not about soft soap or flattery, his words. Not about soft soap or flattery. It's about actually finding something you're genuinely interested in and then taking that interest. And it makes it very difficult when your partner, all they offer is just like, hey, we're out of crackers. You know, and that's the first line of the scene. But when you actually are... You know, again, when you're actually, you've shed the shields of normalcy and you're allowing yourself to actually be inspired by anything, you know, then we're out of crackers is a huge offer. Mm-hmm. You know, and even though it would be shitty in anybody else's thing, it is a huge offer and it winds up making it so that you're invested in everything that's going on, not just what they said, but how they said it. And that's why hyper-listening was a big pile of shit failure for me, which is great. It was a great learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I went on a tangent. I apologize. That was going to go obliquely.
No, not at all.
You squeezed in some third-hand Dave Rozowski.
I squeezed it.
You mentioned soft focus. I believe soft focus might have been third-hand Dave Rozowski.
Soft focus has been around forever. Yeah. But you know what? Dave Rozowski, I don't think I'm going to give enough credit to that guy. Third-hand Dave Rozowski tells me to burn things, by the way. I imagine there's a Dave Rozowski, this ethereal Dave Rozowski that sits with me and just tells me all kinds of horrible, stupid things to do on stage. And then I go, well, Dave Rozowski says so. I've never met the man in my life.
How awesome would it be if I had Dave Rozowski back there?
Oh my God, that'd be great.
This version that burns things, I don't know. Firsthand, he's like this Buddhist improv guru. Secondhand, he's got compelling ideas. Thirdhand, he's this devil who hides in his closet and comes out and burns things.
It's out of control. I don't know what he's doing. Sorry. He's not the only one I misinterpreted either. I misinterpreted everybody. My friend Arthur Simone in Austin. Amazing, wonderful guy, and just amazing, amazing. And I told him one time, like, there's two things I can definitely say about Arthur Simone. One, everything that I have ever learned from Arthur, I'm confident I misinterpreted. And then two, I value every single one of those misinterpretations. And when I told him that, and that my realization, he was thrilled. He, as an artist, that's exactly the kind of things like, this is the art that I create, and then what you interpret something from it, if you pull something from it, then by all means, you know. So I knew he would take it that way, because that's the kind of guy that Arthur is. He's great. Take a class with him.
Yeah. Yeah, I did. He is great.
Yay!
All right, what's that?
We might have been in the same class.
It's possible. Oh yeah,
that's how we know each other from. Yeah. We did the sentence thing.
Oh, we did.
Yay!
Oh man, that's just, for the people listening at home, they just yay hand hugged across the table.
Well, it was a great thing. The thing is that I know all the stuff that I pulled, what he was trying to teach us, and what I pulled from it were totally different, but it meant a lot to me.
He's fantastic.
I had never considered, he had a whole thing about looking at your words as opposed to just a word, as looking at the word as if you're, like, he's used terms like skating over the letters and paying close attention to the consonant. So you wouldn't say cracker, you would say you know, and it sounds psychotic, and it was, but at the same token, it wound up giving meaning to words in ways that I would never have interpreted before, and it made me, on stage, let's qualify that, on stage, much more, not, I wouldn't say economical, but place much more importance on every word I say.
Well, aware of the phrasing and what tone and cadence can do.
Mm-hmm. Right. And when you wind up finding yourself getting into, like you're talking about, like getting yourself into a different character that you would never experience before.
Yeah.
You find yourself putting yourself in a character simply because you're a natural aphasia starts to put you say a word in a word you wouldn't have expected. So saying Easter, you wind up saying Easter. And then all of a sudden now you're the guy who says like Easter like that. We're going to have an Easter special. We're going to have Thanksgiving and Easter all put together.
I hid the turkeys around the living room. When you find a turkey, you open it up and there's candy inside.
Yeah, and I don't know who that guy is. He's not, I don't think he's Russian. I don't know what he is. But the point is that that's who the guy is. And all of a sudden, I find myself playing this character that I've never played before. And I don't know anything except the fact that that's how he stays Easter. And I just love, and then everything else that came from that wind up quantum leaping into all the other aspects of his personality. And that's what I really enjoy. Sorry, man. No. Man, I've talked way too much. You just cut out half of that crap.
What's the thing that's currently exciting you the most about performing improv?
I've talked too much. You should probably take this one.
Yeah. Oh, might I?
I'm so sorry, Kirsten. I'm so sorry, Drew.
So if we're talking currently, the thing that excites me most is Space Jam, because I host Space Jam at Huge Theater every Thursdays. Mm-hmm. And the growth that's gone through and watching people develop over time is fascinating for me to see. Because I've worked with people, the groups that I've coached or people that I've taught, I've been able to see that development. But I've never been able to so closely witness the development of people who were taught by others secondhand, yet I'm seeing them grow both through maybe classes they're taking at Huge or Brave New Workshop or elsewhere, or just, I think some of them honestly just come every Thursday night slowly start to make these little progressions forward. And that's been unbelievable to witness that over time. I've never had that opportunity to see that before.
Hmm. That's awesome. I am thrilled to do any make-believes. Honestly, for me, an audience is great because it's just more people to play with. But I have fun playing make-believe with anybody all the time. It's a thing that I feel like in our childhoods, we didn't get an opportunity to do. We got an opportunity to make-believe in our childhood with friends and what have you. But I feel like now we're playing make-believe with gasoline. Like, we actually know that our normal selfish nature of, like, no, you don't have the sword, I have the sword. You know, that the things that we didn't know that are natural are part of our innate nature as children to be selfish little brats.
it's a good point mentioning the gasoline part, though, because when you do improv, the things you learn, they start to extend into real life, right?
Yeah.
In good ways, you're better at listening. You can get, quote, the game of the scene in real life, in a business meeting, at dinner. It's always there. But then for me, personally, I have to be aware of that, too, because if I'm in a meeting, there's a time to make that joke because I see the game and I see how to raise the stakes on that game. And even if it is perfect within the context of the meeting, tucking that away and
normalcy.
You
still have to have a veneer of normalcy. And I mean, regardless, and it's funny because that's what I say, like, you know, there are those things where, like, we do need to change things around. For example, and I use this all the time, is argument scenes. I don't know how you feel about arguments, but, like, so let's say we were to see a realistic argument or realistic kind of argument in a coffee shop. I move away from that. I don't go toward it. I don't want to, like, ooh, I'm interested in these two people really seem to be having some kind of disparity in agreement there. Right. You know, I don't care. I don't know why I went in a Minneapolis accent there. You can expect more.
Wait, that was a Minneapolis accent?
Was it? No? Okay, it was crappy then.
But maybe it was. It was really accurate. Because when I quote to a Minnesota, you know, Minneapolis, it's like, So when Minnesota, I went into a coffee shop over there.
I just got here.
That, yours was probably more real.
No, but every time I see that. But the thing, you know, on stage, there are these different rules that I follow for an argument, which is, I'm going to lose.
I'm
going to
lose. Yeah, I'm going to lose
in three lines.
As quickly as I possibly can.
Yeah. Or at least I'm going to just, I'm only going to keep it long enough as if there's a fun tension there. And that usually doesn't last more than three lines. I like to use the show It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. Did you ever watch that show? All they do is argue and bitch. But if you notice, two real important aspects. One, one of the people is always extremely absurd in their thinking. They're always taking turns being straight absurd. And one person's like, oh, of course, we could totally sell gas out of a barrel at the corner. You know, like, of course we should do that. It's the smartest idea ever. And everybody else is the voice of reason, like, hey, dickhole, isn't that going to explode on you? Whatever, you don't know what you're talking about. And that's the end of the conversation. The whole argument lasts maybe three lines, and they always get to a point of like, I'm bored, I need to go to something else, or let's agree to disagree. We'll see the actions of it later. And so they never go beyond, you know, they hardly ever go beyond like three lines of argument. Otherwise, that show would get really tedious, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I feel the same way on stage. So,
you know, I had Lauren Anderson for my level one over at Brave New Workshop, and I think it was the first class that she said... you know, in doing improv, you're going to, she talked about the things that you're going to benefit from. You're going to become a better listener, blah, blah, blah. You're also going to notice assholes, real assholes so quickly, that you might not have noticed before. People who are genuinely selfish, self-involved
entitled
assholes.
Pricks, yeah. Yeah.
Which one of us did you notice?
Why is it just got to be one?
Or the one guy who has monopolized the entire podcast.
No, neither of you guys.
Matthew.
Neither. It's me.
Monopolizing
it's me.
The podcast.
Oh, yeah. Dude, noticing things. Noticing who's asshole. Noticing status.
Yes.
When you learn about status and then you see it happen in real life.
Yeah.
And just the constantness of it. Oh,
the need for high status from people and the blah, blah, blah.
Honestly, I feel like my status, like understanding status, is just continuing progression of things. Like there's a game that we played in Austin every once in a while. You ever do high status battle?
No.
Or low status battle? You ever do that? You get two people. You all get a circle around them, and it's like, you know, like a Fight Club thing. Only you guys really do a scene to see who can be more low status. It's kind of a
that's hard.
A low status game is exactly. And the thing is that, but if you play it. Eventually, like most people who play it, wind up butting their head up against the same wall, and wind up doing the same things, and not figuring out what is low status. And I love low status battle. I started using this as my cheat, my go-to, because I don't think anyone figured it out before. We would do low status battle as a short form show, and people. One of the things that the experienced improvisers would go. Oh, I know what I'll do. And they just leave the stage immediately. Like they don't even start on the stage at the very beginning. And every once in a while, you're like. Crying in the background, you know, behind the stage. You know what I mean? It's become a de facto gimmick trick. Well, knowing that everybody's going to leave the stage because I'm like, I'm in a group and it's a competitive thing where we're all trying to see who could be the legend.
Yeah.
I started doing this and it came out as just me just trying to fail and be like, screw this. I at least want the scene. This is going to be a stupid scene. And I just came out and just tried to be super crazy high status as much as I could. Right off the bat, you know, it came out of me just trying to throw it, you know, clearly, and it'd be hilarious, and that'd be the end of that. You just let somebody else win. But then I realized me trying to be high status all of a sudden turned it into this low status thing where I was like, all right, all you pricks, get out of here, goddamn CEO, you get out of the fucking plane, and nobody's coming on. So I'm like, come on, guys. And what do you know? All of a sudden, the high status person winds up becoming the low status because Nelson needs something from you, and you didn't need anything from him. And I just stumbled upon it. This is what I talk about when I mean experiments. You know, like these are things where, and I find most of our experiments come from me just trying to fail, or me just finding new ways to fail in a way that is affable and lovely and fun. And not knowing what it's going to be.
To tie it back to the top, you asked about a universal note.
Yeah.
One of the reasons there isn't one is because whatever I've prepared ahead of time, if I'm teaching or if I'm coaching, I've less prepared. I'm usually more just looking to react in the moment. Yeah. But you're going to find things working with that group or working with that individual that you couldn't have possibly anticipated. Maybe you have from a similar experience, but it's going to be a little bit different. Yeah. And that's why it's touch and go. So, and that's also why everything we say is bullshit, because everything we say is based on things that have happened in the past, not on what's happening right now. Yeah. And therefore, that's it might apply to this, or it might not. This might be a unique thing.
I just thought of the universal note. If I had one note, and all I could give was one note, is learn how to lose. Not learn how to lose. Learn how to lose, like, fine, I'll give up. There's a thing that I wound up saying about good improvisers, or bad improviser hand grenade in the form of whatever. It's a metaphorical hand grenades out on the stage. It's just a piece of and just a horrible scene. Bad improviser sees a hand grenade and says, fuck this, I ain't going out there, and stays on the side. Good improviser sees a hand grenade, you know, somebody throws it down there and goes, better jump on it because other to protect my, get everyone's back, and they jump on it and they lose that way.
Yeah, okay.
But I think a great improviser, I think the great improvisers are the ones that see the hand grenade and goes, yay, hand grenade, and they jump on it. You know, they all go, wee, and they all rush to jump on the fucking hand grenade because the hand grenade is this whole other offer of you getting exploded. Okay. You know, it's this whole other thing where we wind up, and I find that when we talk about like coming into life, I find out not dreading the lack of preparedness in my life. Yeah. I'm dreading what's going to happen in this particular search situation. I'm more excited about, as opposed to just pensive about, I'm excited about the idea that I'm going to come up against things that I'm going to come up against failures, and I will have the experience, I'll have the opportunity to see how I'll react in those failures. They're always, again, we talk about the low status battle.
Right.
Here's this is going to go horribly. Let's go out there and blow up. Do something where I'm in a place where I'm no longer comfortable. And then enjoy how I decide to handle this place where I'm no longer comfortable.
It's like Jill Bernard saying, go toward the fear. Feel the fear, go towards it. Don't go.
And I look at it, and I've replaced fear with fun.
Yeah.
You know, and like the fear, this fearful thing is now like, oh, there's something funny. This is going to be one of the things that we would say in the stunt prof group that was in Improv for Evil in Austin, is that one of my favorite things from the guy, Mark Major, love that guy, love him, love you, Mark, is we would say, hey, let's do this stupid and crazy idea. Sometimes it works, sometimes it wouldn't. But Mark, regardless, if he didn't like it, would just go, that sounds terrible. Let's do it. And I've adopted that. Like, that sounds horrible. Let's totally do it. And that's been pretty much my philosophy. They really helped me out. So
that's a life philosophy, or this is just improv?
No, you know, there's certain things you can do in improv. And I said this before, losing is an art form that borders on morality. Improv is the safest vehicle we have to explore that morality. And I love that. Losing is an art form that borders on morality. Improv is the safest vehicle we have to explore that morality. We don't have an opportunity to run a stop sign in real life.
Yeah.
You know, there's a good chance it'll be a serious consequence. But in improv, we can get our little puppets in the form of our characters to do whatever we want, be dumb and stupid and die and come back to life and, you know, whatever. Right. We can do anything we want. And if we have fun being in this shared space where we get the chance to lose to each other's ideas and then gain from each other losing to each other's ideas, you know, or just losing is this whole massive concept that this just gains that merits exploration for the rest of your damn life. But, you know, you have this opportunity to create these really fun make-believes with your friends. Yeah.
Because we're so busy trying to win in real life.
And we go back to winning after we get off the stage and being a dickhole. Hopefully we absorb a little bit of it.
Of course, though, you're not referring to when you get in an actual show, though. Then it's about winning, right?
You need to win the show. Oh, my God.
This is practice. Showtime, you're winning.
Showtime, you got to win. Yeah. And afterwards, we get in a troop and we go like, all right, who won that one? I think Drew won that one. He won by pushing everybody, waving everybody off the stage and not taking any wipes.
And then the losers pay, right?
Yeah. Improv.
I do have one question, though.
Oh, yeah? I'm sorry.
I am expecting a telegram, and I've brought my own machine. It makes something of a rattle, but it's important to me.
Oh, Abraham, you and your machines. I don't like them! I don't like them! I don't like them!
We really frown on that, but I guess we'll make an exception because you're the president.
Thank you very much, and thank you for not making eyes at my wife when she made that remark.
Mary Todd doesn't like no eyes being poked at her!
Look, speaking from the actors, we're not going to get upset about it, but I think the people behind you might get very mad at you.
perhaps if I wasn't sitting down here with the commoners and I was up in, say, my own booth, this wouldn't be such an issue.
We'll find a booth for you. Okay.
Great. I am the president, and this is the first lady, and you've got us sitting down here like a groundling.
Yes. What do you mean I have to move back a row for the president?
Is that John Wilkes Booth?
Yes.
Aren't you Edwin Booth's little brother?
Yes.
The actor, Edwin. What's it like being Edwin Booth's brother? That must be quite a charm.
Oh, my God. I would like to be recognized for the man that I am, not the man that I am related to.
Hey, that's John Wilkes Booth. You need to get his autograph. You need to get it now.
John, I'll thank you for not making eyes at my wife when she just went
Don't
into
that. Don't make eyes at me. Don't make eyes at me.
So if you would just be a the bigger man.
I don't understand. I'll do it, but okay. I am not happy about
thank
this.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm really not happy about this.
Thank you.
Oh my God, did you get his autograph? I want to monogram his autograph. I love him so much.
Hold on one second. I'll just take this telegraph paper that I just received and see if I can't get John Wilkes to sign it.
You need to handle the situation better, Abe. You need to handle the situation better. I'm your wife, damn it.
You want me to sign this now, too? I'm trying to watch the show. Will you leave me alone?
Abe, when you handle the situation,
another telegraph coming through.
Would you guys please stop? I'm just trying.
I hope there's other celebrities here who I can get an autograph
you
from.
You people are infuriating.
Walter, the bunnies are back.
I don't want to take any more pictures of bunnies. We got photo albums just full of bunnies and grandchildren. I don't want to take any more pictures.
But the grandchildren are over now, and I want pictures of them with the bunnies.
Oh, damn it,
Walter,
Martha, all right, fine.
Spread more carrots everywhere.
Oh God! All right, I'll go get the carrot bag.
Thank you,
Jeremy, Walter. Lucy, Marvin, Nancy.
They sure gave us interesting names, us being bunnies.
I sure think so.
Jeremy, you think they're ever going to let us out of this little cage
I sure hope so, Lucy.
Man, you know what I could go for right now?
A carrot, because that's what I could go for. I could also go for some freedom and perhaps a little bit of love.
Well, I would like to think that you've gotten a little bit of love while you were in this cage.
I've mostly just gotten sex. I want love.
We've been fucking like bunnies in here.
Exactly, but you won't cuddle with me afterwards, nor will you actually look at me.
Well, there's other bunnies that needed fucking. What do you expect monogamy in a bunny cage?
Well, actually, yes, that's the way I was raised. To be a monogabunny.
Well, what do you think all these other human-named bunnies would think if I wasn't with them?
Well, I would like to think that you would be my girl.
Well, I've got news for you. This bunny is a top.
We'll see. You're talking to this other person, and I am not pleased with it. Marvin the bunny is not pleased with you talking to this other bunny. I thought we talked about this.
Ooh, did you call that talking, Marvin?
Oh, but yeah, I would call it talking. You're talking and you're snuggling, and I feel like we have a special relationship, and I would like to be in that relationship.
I see that you are making eye contact with Marvin, Lucy. I don't understand this at all.
I was just trying to learn more about what a bunny from Kazakhstan might have to say, and also have sex with him.
It seems like you want to do more than have sex with him. It seems like you want to love him, unlike me.
Well, when I get to the final bunny, I'm out of energy, and I collapse on the bottom of the cage, and sometimes I just need to rest in the hail and the poop, and it appears to be cuddling.
Margaret, the bunnies are all just looking at each other again.
Well, move the grandchildren to the bunnies, then. We need this picture.
Damn it. All right, Margaret, look. The bunnies are in the cage. They've been shitting and pooping, and no one's been taking care of the damn thing. There's just bunny crap and sperm everywhere, and I would like if the children didn't want to approach this. Bunny is a filthy animal, Margaret. You just have to come to terms with that.
Well, they look great in photographs. Adorable.
I'm just going to spread carrots from this carrot bag. Here you go, bunnies.
Go get the grandchildren. Where's Fluffy and Nibbles?
All right, I'm going to go get the grandchildren.
There's carrots spread all about outside the cage, but the door's still locked.
I feel like this is a tease that is worse than not having love.
It does feel like a tease. You know what this tease has given me?
Let me guess.
A bunny boner. Yeah, which tingles. Yeah.
So that's right, I decided to call myself a bunny boner, and, you know, I thought it was pretty fun. You know, I just put that on my name tag here at the Best Buy, and, you know, and it comes around, and some people don't notice. They just kind of, you know, just kind of look at it, because they just look, you're just an employee at Best Buy, you got the blue shirt, whatever. And then they just happen to look at the name tag here, and it just gives them a nice, fun part of their day, you know? And then they can buy some appliances and iPhones and what have you, and I'll be able to be happy the fact that they had that fun experience where they go back and tell their children or their wife or their coworkers, and like, yeah. And then I looked his name tag, and he said, Bunny Boner. Bunny Boner. Get it? So that's how it worked. So.
And that's a wonderful story, Jared. Yeah. But, yeah, right. But you're still going to have to talk to HR. I'm sorry. It's just... It's funny, and that's why we love you around here, is your sense of humor. But some people did notice that you wrote Bunny Boner.
Okay, all right. Well, all right. But, you know, Fred the other day just told a joke, you know. I mean, if telling jokes is a crime, you know. It just, you know, Fred told a joke about a chicken crossing a road. I mean, what the hell, man?
Why did the chicken cross the road, customer?
Oh, here it is again.
To buy an Apple product from us. It's a different punchline.
See, it's marketing.
I don't get it.
Marketing. We don't actually sell bunny boners here.
Wait, no, that's the joke. I don't understand. I don't understand. I just.
So you lost another job.
Sorry, Dad. I was just trying to be, you know, the cut up. You know, I just want people to like me.
It's okay. Your mother never cleaned out your room like I suggested she should have, but. I'll do without an office, and I'll do with a son living here again.
Complain.
Sorry, Dad, I just...
I'm still proud of you, son. I'm proud that you had the job to begin with.
Oh, thanks, Mom. I appreciate it. Just, I don't know, if I have a choice between working a job without having any humor in it or not having a job at all, it's just a hard decision. I don't know why I should have to choose, you know?
Understood. You come home to find humor in living with your parents.
You know, he hasn't laughed for real in 15 years. Your father's lost his humor.
The Ford plan will do that to a man.
See, Mom, I don't want to end up like Dad. I mean, no offense, Dad. I don't want to end up like Dad. I've seen what the Ford plant does, you know. They just march you in every day, and they hook that shackle to your ankle, and you just got to put in car bits and stuff, and every day, and then at the end, they blow the whistle, and then they just kick you out. It just seems like it's just a really heartless thing.
First of all, the ankle shackling's the best part of my day. Was, anyway. I wish I could get shackled up to that exhaust belt manifold maker again. And, man... That sweet, sweet whistle let me know that it was time to leave, but it was also a reminder that in the morning the whistle would go off again and it would be time to do it again.
He used to have all those words for me, and now he reserves them for the Ford plant.
I'm not my job. This isn't going to happen to me, Dad. You'll see. Mom, Dad, you'll see. I'm not going to move in here. I'm going to make it on my own.
Go get him, son.
Thank you, Mom. You always believed in me. And it's not going to be at the Ford plant, and it's not going to be at Best Buy.
I'll take a Whopper meal, please, Mr. Bonner.
Yeah, that's me. I was looking for retirement work, and I guess this is pretty good.
It's the best, Dad. I told you, working at Burger King's going to be a whole new life for us.
Well, you know, I hope to someday get promoted to assistant manager, but that would, of course, be after my son quits yet another job and gives up his position.
I didn't ask for your life story. I just want a Whopper meal, please.
I assume you want it your way?
Yes, with all lettuce and no carrots.
It's interesting that you mentioned no carrots, because carrots aren't on the Burger King menu.
I just really hate carrots, so I just make sure to say everywhere I go that I do not want carrots.
Okay, I think I see what's going on here. You and my son have some sort of gay code. What? I've cracked your gay code. Funny. Son, at least tell me you're a top. At least tell me you're a top, son.
All right, Dad, you know, I really hate to talk about this. I brought you into the office here.
It's more of a broom closet, but I guess there's a computer.
Yeah, it is what it is. This is where the computer fits in the Burger King. Well, I'm sorry, but you've been talking to the customers for like a really long time, and so I'm sorry, we're just going to have to let you go. And I appreciate all the... You don't have a lot of comedy to anything you say. You just kind of like meander around your life story hoping that there'll be something funny. And then the drive-thru line gets to be out toward the freeway. And then you cause like three people to die. So, I'm sorry, Dad. I'm going to have to let you go.
Could you at least blow the whistle one more time?
Yeah, Dad. I could do that.
Could you at least let me go give a couple of the customers in the drive-thru line a quick hug?
Yeah, Dad. You go ahead. Just go over and knock on their doors and stuff and just open up the windows and you can reach in and hug them.
And this may be too much, son. Could you let me go back there and marry some condiments together and put them in the fridge? I want to walk in that fridge one more time, but I don't want to do it without cause.
A little ketchup groom, a little mayonnaise bride. Yes, one more time, Dad. It's all right.
Thank you, son.
And your little pickle ring bearer.
Son, I'm glad you finally found your place as an assistant manager at the Burger King on East Lake Avenue.
Dad, I enjoy working with you. And I hope you don't feel bad having to go back to the Ford plant. Here's your shackle.
Wait a second. What? I thought this was a sad moment. They opened the Ford plant back up again? Surprise! What? Jed!
Welcome back, Clarence. Your old job's waiting for you at the manifold stand.
Well, put me in the Iron Maiden and let me get to work.
It's a waiting for you.
Guys, it turns out that Obama went ahead and bailed out the Ford plant, so we can all work. I can even do my job of putting in door windows into the passenger side cars of the Ford Escape.
And I do the driver's side. We're such a good team.
Oh, thank you, Mary. You're really great.
Thank you.
High five.
Hey, guys. I know that I'm just, you know, here in the Iron Maiden doing my usual little job, but when I was at a job at a fast food establishment during my retirement days, and you know, I think I picked up a few things about cars, seeing them go through the drive-thru line. Could I do some engineering?
Oh, somebody's so getting big for his britches.
Yeah, Mr. All worked here. Where do you think you worked at, Burger King?
I did. Wow. I worked at Burger King.
Oh my God, are you still married?
Yeah.
Oh.
How do you balance such a high-pressure career and marriage?
I have a feeling that you guys are doing what's called ball busting right now. I have a feeling you were busting my balls, okay?
What? No.
Yes.
No.
I respect everything you've done.
No.
Wait a second. Is this factory even open? Why is the line not running?
Cardboard! What? See, it just falls apart. Funny joke. Ha ha, loser.
Guys. If we could all bring it in here real quick.
No, sure.
I'm here, Chief. You
know, yeah, it's just that there's been a morale issue around the park. Sure, the lawns are getting mowed and baseball's being played,
but... Do you mean ethics? Or...
I mean, there's been
ethics... Morale or morals?
Morals or...
Morals or morale?
I'm confused.
Well, that's part of the problem, isn't it?
Oh.
There's not a clear understanding of, sure, it's a morale issue, but I believe, and I'd like your feedback, that it was caused by an unclear understanding of our code of ethics going into this.
Because the handbook has more L's than it needs.
But okay, so that's talking about morel mushrooms, and I appreciate that you brought a pig and helped find those, but that's not what we're doing when we're in the field. We're mowing the field. And from an ethics point of view, it was fine to find them, but it was not fine to sell those mushrooms. That was where you went wrong.
Well, I do whatever I can for the team, the Moray Eels. Go Moray Eels.
And that's another thing. You've also been known to be playing on teams while you were on duty, which, as we all know, is fine.
Is that unethical?
No, it's not. You can play, but you can't get in on the Coors Light cooler whilst you're playing. If you're going to be going back on the job, guys, I've been clear on this.
Well, the problem is the manual has a bunch of typos.
Hell, there's more L's than it needs, for sure.
Okay, guys, I hammered that out a long time ago, but I think it's clear what the spirit of the manual is, okay?
Chief, you brought me in your office. You want to chew me out, it seems. But you can't chew me out. I'm a lone renegade, Chief. And I shot everybody. I shot everybody because I was tired of that stupid moral code that you busted up.
I tell you what, I like that you're a renegade, and I don't mind that you shot people, but I question the ethical reasons which you use to determine who lives and who dies.
Let me tell you something about fighting crime on the mean streets of Minneapolis, Chief. It's not about questions, it's about answers. The criminal makes the question, can I get away with this? And I make the answer, fuck you, die.
See, therein is the thing. You are not judge, jury, and executioner unless you have clear ethical purpose to kill them. If you have any kind of ethical dilemma, no kill. That's laid out very clearly. Your problem, you're not even thinking about the ethics of the moment. You're just killing!
There's no time to think, Chief! Damn it, man!
I'm just gonna double park my car here for a second. That's okay, right? Yes?
Roll down your window, ma'am.
Okay. Yes.
Okay, open up your mouth and put your mouth in the barrel of this gun.
Once again, you've iced another citizen.
She opened her own damn mouth. If she didn't want a gun in her mouth, she shouldn't have opened it.
Tell you what, you thought I was bringing in here to yell at you? I'm not. Minnesotans have a thing or two to learn about driving and what to do. And I'm glad that lady died. I'm glad you did it. You didn't do anything wrong.
You said I didn't do anything wrong?
You didn't do anything wrong.
So you're not going to bitch me out or anything?
Not one bit. Unless you fall through on this next one. We got a real problem here in Minnesota. People don't understand how to zipper merge. They get over into the right lane way too early.
Oh.
I want you to head out to 494 near the Best Buy, and I want you to ice everyone who gets what? Over a mile early and doesn't wait till the last second to merge.
You can't tell me what to do. That doesn't sound like a renegade if you tell me to go murder a bunch of people. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the park and pick up litter. Screw you, Chief.
So, Donnie, you're having a real problem with your problem with authority? Is that right?
I just don't like people telling me what to do.
No, I understand, but it sounds like you're really being allowed to do whatever you want, and you don't have something to rebel against.
Stupid. You're a rebellion. Shut up.
Wow. You used to be so much better at your comebacks.
You're a comeback. Litter!
Donnie,
I gotta pick up this litter!
Donnie, as your therapist, I really strongly believe that you need something to rage against, and you just don't have that right now.
You've been so accommodating. I asked, we were in the therapy, and I tried to move the therapy session to the park, and you totally agreed to that, and we all moved to the park.
Whatever you need.
That's the problem, man. I got nothing. Listen, I know this, but I ain't smart, and I don't have any skills or anything.
You are smart, and you're so good at killing people.
Oh, nah, you shut up. You're good at killing people.
Excuse me, guys. You seen a garbage can around here? Oh, never mind. I'll just throw this right here in the park.
Oh?
What was that?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're talking to me?
Do me a favor. Open your mouth.
Yeah, so I'm in charge of this park around here, and I tend to run a pretty loose park. I let my employees let their code of ethics determine what they're doing.
Yeah.
But what we can't do is we can't have people running their businesses, in your case, therapy, off of park benches.
Oh, I understand.
So you're profiting from the parks.
And how did that make you feel that I did that without your permission?
I'm glad you asked. At first, I thought, well, that's good. That's somebody who's making the most out of things. But then I thought, well, what if somebody else needed to use that park bench and this person's profiteering from it? That was the ethical dilemma I encountered, and then I had to confront you.
I understand. And so really what it was is you felt hurt that you weren't included as a part of the process of the decisions that I made.
That's true. And can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I feel like that's the way my mother was, too. She didn't include me in the decision-making process,
which
led to me to have these kinds of conversations with you. And I apologize, but again, I've got to move you on out of this park.
Oh, you don't need to apologize. What you're experiencing is something called transference.
Mm-hmm.
It's where you take the emotions that you feel towards one person and you're moving them towards another person. In this case, me. And I understand.
Well, geez, Louise, this is really challenging my whole moral compass.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to have to rewrite the manual, and I haven't been on a typewriter in 8 years.
Sweetie, how's the book coming? You've been up there all day long. I hear every once in a while I hear a click of something, like a letter or two.
It's not a book, baby. I'm just trying to basically hash out my story. I'm trying to hash out my story.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you're just doing it, you know, one letter at a time, kind of. You know, they have word processors. They have these computers. I went to this guy at Best Buy. His name was Boner Bunny. It was so funny. He was trying to sell me a computer. They have word processing on these things. It's fantastic.
First of all, I don't believe you. Clearly, this thing called a word processor doesn't exist because I really doubt Best Buy employ someone named Boner Bunny.
It was Barney Bunny or Bunny Boner. You know what? It was really funny. You just had to been there.
Baby, when you're going to try to pull the wool over my eyes and change me out of my ways, which I am set in, you are going to have to try harder than that.
I know. It's just, okay. Can I at least see what you've done? Let me just crank out this piece of paper here.
14 year.
14 year.
Yeah.
14 year. Is it going to be years? Is it going to be an S there?
I hadn't yet decided.
Okay. All right. Just put it back in the typewriter then.
Roll that right on in there.
He's been in the...
Decision made.
And that's an F. That's an interesting...
Well, I was going for an S, but then... Do you ever know when you're playing Scrabble and those S's are so valuable?
Yeah.
And you don't want to use your S on a word you shouldn't use it on because it's going to be a conjoiner later and get multiple points? I guess that just drifted into my mind and I thought S, but I pressed F.
Okay.
Pressed F.
So it's now the whole beginning of the man you've been working on for 6 hours in the attic is...
14 year.
14 year. So, that's great. I'm curious what'll be the next letter.
Can we talk about the bunny in the room right now? The elephant of a bunny in the room, if you will? I've got a bunny that I've trained to speak English, and you're not even complimenting me. He can read, he's literate, and he reads my works, and you're up here haranguing me.
Okay, I did want to talk to you about the bunny, I'll be honest, but there's just a lot of... It seems like... I mean, I love you, sweetheart, I do, but there was a lot of things in this first year of marriage... where I just am very curious about, that I didn't know kind of going into it. There's the talking bunny who's smoking a cigar. By the way, that is very creepy. It's the fact that you take 6 hours and you type on an old Emerson typewriter and you spell 14 years. Just a bunch of stuff. Just a bunch of weird stuff.
In my defense, you said going into it. Going into it, I had a bunny. That bunny could not yet talk.
And
I educated the bunny
how
to talk. And also, you said you would prefer it if I didn't smoke anymore.
And
was I supposed to throw the cohibas away?
No. And I did say that anything that you wanted to do in the attic, and the attic was your space, and you could do whatever you wanted in it. So whatever it is would not be any judgment of mine. I honestly thought you'd just be doing internet porn, which I was totally fine with as long as you had it upstairs. But I see now that it's absolutely not anything like that. It's much, much more surreal. And I'm sorry. I'm just trying to come to terms with it. The attic is still your safe place, sweetheart. The attic is still your safe place.
I don't want to say that we've got a trust issue.
No.
But which part of my typewriter am I going to jack off to? Honestly.
Familiar.
Internet porn in the attic?
Is there asking for suggestions?
No, I'm not asking for suggestions.
I don't know. This is a weird place. It feels every time I come out of the attic to go to clean and vacuum, it feels like I'm on acid. There's so much weird shit going on. And that bunny is giving me an evil eye. And I'm very, very uncomfortable right now.
Well, do I go into the second bedroom that you've turned into your, quote, project area? I've never been in there, have I?
I sew quilts with friends. We sew things on quilts. It's very normal. Every time I come in here, oh my god, why is there a disco ball coming out of the ceiling? What is this? Why is it coming out of the ceiling? Where did you do that? Where did you find the money to have a disco ball automatically come out of the ceiling?
Again, a trust issue. Why do you look at me when I've indicated that I have a bunny that is literate and smokes cigars, therefore probably likes to party?
Why is he breakdancing? And the bunny's breakdancing.
Because he's a skilled dancer.
I don't understand.
And if you would just...
Why can't you
I almost
just...
said something I would have regretted just then.
Why can't you just jack off to internet porn like every other husband?
Because I'm an artist. And a writer. And I've got a book to write.
I'm sorry. I'll go back downstairs to my quilting room. I'm sorry, sweetheart. Can you ever forgive me?
I can forgive you, and I promise I'm not going to burst into there and accuse you of diddling yourself with a sewing machine, which is what you've just done allegorically up here. I can promise that.
14 years.
Quit saying that, bunny! I'm going out of here!
Hey, tell me, other bunny. You don't have a human name like the rest of us.
No, I sure don't.
And also, you're the one who taught us how to speak.
Yep, my name's Vittles, and I learned both bunny and English when I was real little.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, Vittles.
Yeah?
How come you carry that colostomy bag around, and how come you look like you've got... Your chest has been split open.
I'm real old, and I went through some surgery once, not long ago.
You had your pancreas removed, that's what I heard.
It wasn't my pancreas, it was my spleen.
It was your spleen?
Yeah.
Clean out all that THC and...
Well, the reason why my chest is still split open is because they found out I didn't have health insurance.
Interesting.
So they left my chest split.
Vittles, I'm sorry I had to bring you out into the office. I really apologize, but I'm sorry you can't work for NPR anymore.
Why not?
Because you're boring the shit out of all of our people. I apologize that this radio and this radio is exciting.
But I have a wonderful voice, and I'm a bunny who speaks both bunny and English.
Well, here at NPR, we don't mind whether you're a bunny or you're a giraffe or a human or a black or a Jew. We don't care. We're actually part of our whole charter. Our ombudsman said that we have to make sure that we didn't discriminate against anybody, and we're not discriminating against you now. But you are boring, and there's nothing in the charter that says we can't fire you because you're boring. Sorry, Vittles.
Vittles,
yeah?
What are you going to do for work? We're in the middle of the Great Depression.
I was going to try
NPR
to...
NPR let you go?
I was going to check on a lead I had at Burger King.
Burger King?
Yeah.
That sounds pretty good.
Yeah, they don't discriminate against bunnies. Say, nor do they discriminate against colostomy bags or gaping chest wounds.
Say, Vittles, before you go apply for that job,
yeah?
All the other bunnies in the cage are asleep.
Right.
Mind if I flip you over and fuck your chest cavity?
No, that's fine.
All right, then.
I'll have a Whopper. Oh, my God, you're a bunny. That's so cute. Can I take you? Walter, come here. Check out the bunny working at this Burger King.
Dude, do you want to take your picture with me?
I want to take a picture, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Oh, Scott, bring damn it, Margaret, come on.
Bring the grandkids
in. The kids are in the back of the station
wagon. Go get Fluffy.
No, God, the kids, the bunnies are terrible animals. You don't know.
Look at this one. It's different. It's got a colostomy bag.
Excuse me, sir. Did you just say the bunnies are terrible animals?
Listen, I didn't mean anything about them. I'm sure you're one of the good ones.
Oh, good ones.
Yeah, I'm
Walter
sure.
thinks
Excuse
that
me,
you're
sir,
filthy.
Are you... racist?
No, sir. I just would like my burger to not have any fur all over it. Sometimes I get a little angry when I bite into a burger and there's a big pile of fur.
That's true.
Rabbit feces.
You think that because you knew one bunny one time that shed fur that all bunnies...
He hates fur and feces so much that wherever we go, whether there's a bunny working or not, he says, no fur or feces, please.
Right. And I understand it's part of your culture. I don't get into an ethics dilemma with you. I just want a fucking Whopper, okay? See, now I've cussed in front of my grandchildren. They're all crying.
Sir, I think that they might be crying because you're a terrible, hateful racist.
Okay, no, they're not crying. Kids,
Walter.
Kids, grandkids, are you crying because I said the bad word, or are you crying because I'm an awful racist?
I'm crying because of your ethics question. I don't know the answer.
Oh, see? Now you confuse
Walter.
Them. See, you're just like all the other bunnies. You come in with your degrees and your things, like you've been to therapy a million times. We did therapy out in the park.
You know, sir, I might not be a manager here, but I still have the right to refuse to serve you, and so I'm choosing to do that.
Oh.
I'll let my manager Walter. Decide whether or not he wants to serve such a person as you.
Can I still take your picture, please?
Of course. Reginald, would you mind dealing with this person?
What you doing in here?
Oh, great, a black guy. This is terrible. We're going to McDonald's.
Get over here, Bunny.
Hey, Reginald. Did I handle that poorly?
Bunny, you did a pretty good job.
Thank you.
Hey, Bunny.
Yeah?
I gotta talk to you about something.
Okay, why are you taking an aggressive tone?
It's not an aggressive tone. This is the way I talk.
Okay.
I detected a little bit of racism in your tone just then by you suggesting... Ooh, Bunny.
No, based on the way that your consonants are flowing out of your mouth in an aggressive and, you know, can't think of the linguistic term way.
Easter Bunny got your tongue, Bunny?
Maybe, or it could be the gaping chest wound that's leaking on the floor currently.
That's what I was meaning to talk to you about. You're always asking me, Reginald.
Yes?
When am I going to get an opportunity to not just work the till and actually get back there and cook up some vittles?
That sounds exactly like me. I am always frequently asking that.
Well, couple of points. Number one, the one opportunity I gave you when your chest wound was sealed up real good, you were throwing carrots and everything. People don't come to Burger King to eat carrots. They come here to eat boogers.
That wasn't my fault. That's just my nature.
Sure enough. Sure enough. You also, you shit little pebbles all over the floor.
Hey, now...
I don't have a problem with that, but you know what I say. When there's time to lean, there's time to clean. Clean up your little shits.
There's no proof that was me, and I keep telling you that I have a colostomy bag.
Abraham, Lynn! You horrible husband, you! I want you to get me those bunnies over there from that farmer. He has cute bunnies, and our children will love those bunnies, Abraham! I want them so badly!
Mary Todd, I've got a bit of a hole in my head right now.
You are a horrible husband. I'm going to just... You want me to... I have a hole in my head.
Would you guys please shut up? I'm trying to watch the play.
You are making this horrible for John Wilkes, but he's never going to give us our autograph.
I could be wrong, but with my last words, Abraham Lincoln is going to say, I think John Wilkes was aiming for my wife. That's the Ford Theater's call to get the actors back in their shackles. It's time for the performance. Abraham Lincoln, Ford Theater, Mushina.
John Wilkes Booth.
I told you this is a horrible idea. We can't go back and nobody wants to see the assassination of President Lincoln. Nobody wants to see a play about it. And nobody wants to see a play done by servants who don't know how to speak English. It's really fucked us up, Biddles. This is the worst fucking Ford Theater thing that I've ever seen. The whole Ford Theater is going to have a really bad bad reputation. It's not just going to become Abraham Lincoln getting shot in the head.
I thought that it was very exciting. It seemed like a really fast-moving play to me.
If it does, then you tell me what they said, then.
Oh, it's so cool that we've reopened the Ford Theater. I, Edwin Booth, am really excited to get back into acting and reclaim my family name. You guys are not classically trained, it doesn't sound like. Okay, so you guys sound like you're from Europe. Luckily for you, I, Edwin Booth, of course, toured Europe as Hamlet for almost a decade. I'm classically trained. I'm just excited to be back here to reopen the Ford Theater.
Hamlet.
Edwin, I'm sorry. I think you screwed up. No, sir, nobody can understand the Serbians. They leave fur and little pellet poop everywhere. The whole stage is filled with pellet poop and fur. The whole audience is gagging on the poop. Putrescence of everything.
This
is a complete failure, Booth. You've not reclaimed the family name. You've made it worse.
I've got to fall on my own sword here. I, Edwin Booth am responsible for the audience's reaction. It was not the rabbit poops about the stage. It was my failure.
Edwin Booth, your name will live in infamy throughout history.
Who knew that one performance, one terrible performance, could outrun my little brother, apparently accidentally shooting the president?
So that's how it started off. You know, when you started off that whole manuscript with 14 year, I thought that it was going to be about like a manual, but it was actually all about Edwin Booth. 14 year ago, Edwin Booth created the reopening of the Ford Theater. I honestly cried at that opening.
It's another way of saying 4 score and 7 years ago.
It was amazing.
14.
You're like an E. Cummings and Sylvia Plath all wrapped into one.
That's great, but again, you're up in my space.
I'm so sorry, sweetheart. If
you'll excuse me, I've got a date with my typewriter.
It's okay. I need to go diddle myself with the sewing machine. Next
up, Pat! And that's our show. We'd like to thank our special guests, Drew Kirsten and Eric Heiberg, for stopping by. That was a lot of fun. Thank you, gentlemen. Eric and Drew both recently moved here. Eric just moved here 2 weeks ago, so Eric's looking to get some stuff going, doesn't have any groups going yet. Drew, you can see every week hosting Space Jam over at Huge Theater. Huge Theater is located at 31st and Lindale in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And you can see more about Huge Theater at www.hugetheater.com. Drew and I have a duo that we've got going, but we don't have any dates yet. And Eric has been doing some rehearsals with us, so we'll see where that goes.
You can see me this Friday in the Friday Night Stage Match at the Brave New Workshop Student Union, 26th and Hennepin. You can also always go to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Philip Simondet. There's songs, sketches, including my new web series, Minimum Fare, which is an improv podcast. Check that out.
And don't forget to check out Philip's very popular song, Game of Thrones Will Make Her Horny, on funnierdie.com. You can see me up every Wednesday at Huge Theater through the end of May with A Night Out, and that is Tanya Elbert, Max Maliga, Andy Katzung, Joe Halverson, and Carolyn Blomberg, as well as myself. I am also up at the Brave New Workshop Student Union stage match like Philip. However, I don't know next time I'm up, so I'm up intermittently through now and June 15th on Fridays.
Keep in contact with us on Facebook, search for Next at Bat, and you can also send us an email, nextatbatpodcast@gmail.com.
And go to iTunes, subscribe to our podcast, rate and review. It helps us out a lot. Thank you.